Shalom everyone, and today we study Parashat Chayei Sarah, the book of Genesis, chapter 23, verse 2. Vatamot Sarah, no, I'm sorry, this verse 1, chapter 23, verse 1. Vayu Chayei Sarah, 100 shana ve'20 shana ve'sheva shanim shnei Chayei Sarah. Parashat Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah, is speaking about the death of Sarah, which is a kind of a weird raising question, but we'll understand that that's what this parasha is about. So we have the story of the death of Sarah. Abraham is buying the cave of Machpelah in Hebron to bury Sarah. That's one topic. After that topic of the burial of Sarah, we go to chapter 24, which is about finding a mate for Isaac. And then that's a miraculous story of Eliezer, the slave of Abraham, going to Haran to find a woman for Isaac, and he finds Rivka. Okay? And then he brings her back. They get married. That's the other story of this parasha. We'll see later on what's the connection between all the all, among all these stories. So that's two major stories till now. After that, we don't have so many stories. Then we have another story about Abraham taking back Hagar back home. She brings him some more children, and then he gives them gifts and he sends them to the Far East. That's the next story. Then we have the death of Abraham and his burial by his two sons, Isaac and Ishmael. And then the death of Ishmael. Now, what is the major idea of this parasha? What is the major lesson that we have in this parasha? We can find it already in the first verse, where it says, and again, we have a problem with the English translation, because any translation is a commentary. So it depends on the agenda of the translator. And whoever says he has no agenda, he'll be lying about other things too. Everyone has an agenda. Everyone has his own point of view. We're born with that. We should not be ashamed of that. But we should also be aware of it, that we have a limited point of view that depends on our background, depends on what we're going through in life, depends even how did we sleep last night and how did we wake up in the morning, and many other things that basically decide our agenda. So we'll try to see what is the meaning, what is the goal, the main one we can take from this parasha for this week and also for our lives. And when we say Vayu Chayei Sarah, and the lives in plural of Sarah were, so we're talking about life in plural. In Hebrew, it could be when we speak about the lives of Sarah. Why are we talking about lives in plural? Also, life in Hebrew, chayim, is in plural. Chay is single. Chayim is plural. Usually, we use the word life in plural. Why do we say plural? Not just about Sarah, but about every person. Why is it in plural? If we did not get it yet, so when it says the life of Sarah, and it speaks about she was 127 years old, although it doesn't say so, it says something else, but then it says, and the lives of Sarah were 100 year in single, ve'esrim shana, and 20 year single, ve'sheva shanim, and 7 years plural. Shnei chayei sarah. So that can be read, shnei can be read as the years of, but it can be read also the double, the two. Shnei in Hebrew is two, double. And but it means also the years. So which one is the real meaning of that word that has double meaning? Again, could be, and many times both meanings apply. So again, and the double lives, chaye, lives of Sarah. So this is being emphasized twice in the first verse that we're talking about double. So what is the double over here? And if we go even into the numbers, when it says 100 year, only when you study Kabbalah, you understand why 127 and why every number over here is mentioned separately. It doesn't say 127 years, as we read, 100 year, 20 year in single, and 7 years. So in order to understand that, we have to understand Kabbalah. And the language of Kabbalah is teaching us something that is very, very crucial for our own success. We're not talking about just, a spiritual idea that it's nice to have. Our lives, again, even in English, in plural, it is a double, we live a double life. And what does it mean, a double life? Modern research, it's called, since the 90s, there's a research that I like to follow. It's called neurotheology, which is the science that is basically describing the neurology of the brain from the aspect of theology, which means when a person is experiencing a prayer, a meditation, is it just the same part of the brain that is using that we're using for imagination? We just imagine that we pray. We just imagine that we meditate. When that you imagine that we have a spiritual experience, or is there something more than just regular imagination? Because animals can imagine also. A cow can imagine the pasture. How do we know? I've seen sometimes videos of cows in the cold countries that they were stuck inside for the whole months of snow, and now it's spring and they let out to the pasture, and they're so happy and they're dancing. So what does it mean? They could imagine that, and they're waiting for that when they were locked in during the frozen days of the winter. So they can imagine something like this. But what does happen to the human brain when we imagine God? And if you follow the developments in the neurotheology science, there's something very important. There are parts of the brain that are programmed to experience what we call God, to experience the beyond, to experience the world beyond. And this is crucial. Why? We are basically structured. We are basically built to have God, and not just God, but whatever God symbolizes. Which is in when you start to study Kabbalah, the first thing you must study and be aware of is the idea of the split reality that we live in. There is the reality we perceive with the five senses. This is the reality of that we can touch, hear, smell, whatever we can sense and with our senses, and also we can explain with our logic. However, There's another reality. There's a reality of what is beyond, the world that is beyond. So, of course, we live in a world that is basically very materialistic. And if we look in the academy, if we measure what's going on in, modern education, business, whatever, we see like an overwhelming denial of the existence of the universe beyond. While when you study Kabbalah, you understand that basically the universe can be divided into two parts. Basically, the universe is not divided. There's one universe, Olam Ha'emet, the world of truth, which is the way the world is really structured and functioning. And there is the Olam HaSheker, the world of lies, the world of illusion. This is the world that we imagine that exists. Okay? The world that we think it exists because as long as we are trained since we were kids to believe only what the senses can.
Say goodbye.
What the senses can understand, what the senses can somehow figure out, when we live with that, it's a very limited world. However, as we know, human beings are programmed, not just programmed, the hardware, the structure of the brain, according to neurotheology, and the software, both are structured to live, to exist in a double reality. That's why when we say life in Hebrew, chayim, it's in plural. We all live a double life. And I'm saying it many, many times. Since we live in a reality that is so much in denial of the existence of the spiritual, metaphysical, the universe, the beyond, the world above, which is not above 2 meters, 10 meters, kilometers, whatever. It's above in a higher frequency. As long as we ignore that aspect of the universe, we are doomed to live a life that is very, very limited. And that's why I'm saying so many times, why is it that although we live in a world that wherever you just go, education, academy, wherever, metaphysics is something that we ignore. If you talk about it, you will be looked upon as a weirdo, a freak. And on one hand, on the other hand, when we look about the film industry, about the poetry and whatever is being published, there's a huge, huge chunk that is dealing with fantasy, witchcraft, superpowers, whatever, nothing logical over here. And this part is growing every year. And it's getting like a very huge chunk of the culture of entertainment. If you go to Disney, about magical princesses and witchcraft and stuff like this. And we go to Harry Potter, the craze of Harry Potter and the movies and the books and stuff like this. And we go to all the theme parks, how much they give to magic, magical palaces, magical castles, magical spells and stuff like this. Why is it that, if there is a need, if there's a demand, there will be a supply? We need that. We need that. And the outlaying of basically in this parasha is days we live in a double reality, and we It's a matter of survival. If you're not aware of it, then I'll explain. First of all, we can have many, many, many ways to explain Parashat Chayei Sarah. However, the Zohar starts about the explanation of the parasha. Verse 1 in Hasulam Zohar commentary. Vayu Chayei Sarah, of course, the first verse, and then Rabbi Yossi Patach Vamar. Rabbi Yossi opens and says, Vayisu et Yonah vayitilu el hayam vayamod hayam mizapo. And he brings over here the whole issue of the book of Jonah. And the book of Jonah is a very, how should I say, it's a typical biblical story that does not make sense. Here we have Jonah. He has a prophecy. He's running away from the prophecy. Again, just the moment somebody has a prophecy in our lives, he should be institutionalized, right? Sedated and basically locked up so he does not bother normal human beings, because the moment you have a prophecy, you're not really considered to be part of the crowd. Okay, but Jonah is running away from the prophecy, and he goes into the he takes a ship from the from Jaffa, Jaffa, the ancient port of Jaffa, and he's going to Tarshish. Okay, and the question is, what's the story that the sea is starting to be very, very unusually stormy, and the people on the ship, they're trying to figure out why is that happening, and they use some magic and they found out that everything is because of Jonah. And he tells them, yes, I'm running away from my prophecy, I'm running away from my destiny, I'm running away from God, it's all because of me, throw me into the ocean and you will be saved. Why should all of you die because of me? They are reluctant to do that. Finally, they throw him into the sea, and he is drowning, but a big fish comes and swallows him up. I hope you know the book of Jonah. And then Jonah is inside the fish for 3 days, and he's starting to repent, and he's promising God that he won't run away from the prophecy. And the fish is being resurrected after he died already, started to be rot, to start to rot. The fish is resurrected, and the fish spits Jonah back to the shore. And Jonah is going to carry the prophecy to the city of Nineveh, the capital city of the empire, the Assyrian Empire. So that basically, this is the story. It's not a rational story, because you throw somebody to the sea, and the storm is immediately over, and then a fish swallows you up, and you're still alive, and then the fish spits you out, and you're going to carry the prophecy. This is not a rational story. But it's not the only irrational, very extremely irrational story that we have in the Zohar of Parashat Chayei Sarah. However, the Zohar is saying you have to understand that the whole story of Jonah is mostly an allegory. And I'll just give an example. The Zohar is asking a question. When Jonah ran away from home, why the sea was stormy? Why not the land? That's a question you should ask. The moment he got out of the house, if the land was shaking, maybe he would come home sooner. That maybe that would be more efficient. The delay till he got to the port, till he found the ship, till he got on the ship, till they got in. Okay? And as always, explaining to the word for sea in Hebrew, yam, is also representing that sephira, emanation, that is called bina. Why? What's the correlation? Yam, we know that Hebrew, every letter is a number. The word yam, sea, an ocean, is 50, the number 50. Bina is the number 50. The 50 gates of Bina, the emanation of Bina. Bina is also being called many times the world above, the upper world, the world to come, which is also a mistranslation. In Hebrew, it doesn't say the world to come, it says the world that is coming. Because it's coming, shining at us all the time. The question is, do you welcome that world? And so basically, what the Zohar is saying is giving a very amazing explanation about the allegory that the sea is correlated to the world to come, to the upper dimension, to the dimension of the universe beyond the physical. The physical universe that we can perceive with our senses. And because he was running away of the prophecy, and the prophecy was coming from that level that is called Bina, therefore the sea became stormy and not an earthquake. And therefore, he was thrown into the sea because he was running away from his destiny that was that ocean of ideas and prophecies. Because that was to getting back into the prophecy he was trying to get away from. Like our generation that is trying to get away from anything that is prophetic, religious. Whatever is beyond, and especially we have a whole world of academy that is, I've been part of it, and you could see how it is wired, structured, as if it with a very strong deterministic idea about denying anything metaphysical. Okay? Which I noticed as a student of, Tel Aviv University and my first degree and my second degree, it's like in science, it was so obvious, especially when I started around that time to study Kabbalah, and you start to realize how the denial is so strong. And of course, there are historical reasons because modern science came out of the ashes of the medieval religion that was very dogmatic, that did not allow you to think. So, in order for modern science to develop, it had to be in a very strong denial of the rulership of clergy, of the dogmatic religion of the Dark Ages, that are not called Dark Ages for nothing. They were dark because dogmatic religion of the Dark Ages was very, very debilitating for humanity. Okay, so however, the religion of the Dark Ages that science was rebelling against, yes, it did use the faith in the mystical universe, but that was very manipulative and not constructive. How do we know? The Dark Ages were not really a nice era. Okay? It was not a nice era. It was not a great message for human development. Okay? So, but you know what they say? It's like the moment you are in total denial of the universe beyond, you lose a lot. So, yes, on one hand, modernism got free from the clergy and the dogmas and the dictatorship of the clergy. It doesn't matter what religion. Yeah. You can say part of the world is still under that dictatorship. But you can read the story of Jonah from a totally different aspect as an allegory of a human being trying to run away from his destiny, from the other dimension. And the fact is, sooner or later, you have to come back to it because you are structured for that. You are, that's your calling. It doesn't matter how much you're going to run away from it. Sooner or later, you or your children or your children's children will have that craving, that need to go back to godliness, to spirituality. And so right now, humanity is basically trying to reinvent also the whole idea of what is spirituality, what is religion, what is faith. All of that, it's a journey, a very, very, very fascinating journey, because that's why you study Kabbalah. Okay, in order to learn the to connect to these dimensions, because you're not complete, as we're going to see in the Zohar later on. This verse 21, I love this verse so much. And here again, we can see two ways of explaining the same verse, which is, how do you relate to wisdom? Verse 21 says like this: "Asheyo mi shememayet et atzmo ba'olam hazeh." Praiseworthy is the person that memayet et atzmo means he is making from himself small in this world. He's diminishing himself in this world, in this physical world. Kama hu gadol ve'elyon ba'olam ha'nitzchi. How great and supreme that person is in the eternal world. Okay, we have this physical elusive world that is very limited. Why it's very limited? Because how much of this world do we really understand, perceive, and experience? Especially when we are being raised in to become materialistic. Okay? Whatever, that's when we are being educated, that whatever you're looking for exists in the physical dimension, which means health, only physical, wealth, it's only physical, and happiness depends on the physical success, on your health, and your financial success, physical success. And even the other materialistic stuff, like a home is a house, and a family is physical people. And there's a problem, because that's not what we're not looking for. We're looking for the eternal dimension of the same stuff. V'chen patach rosh ha'yeshiva. So the head of the yeshiva in the upper world, it's kind of its description of a discussion in the world above, in the heavenly world. Mishu katan ba'olam hazeh, whoever is small in this physical world, hu gadol ba'olam ha'nitzchi, he's great in the eternal world. Umishu gadol ba'olam hazeh, hu katan ba'olam ha'nitzchi. And whoever is great, has greatness in this physical world, is small in the eternal world. Shekatuv vayu chayei sarah, brings the example that the number 100 in the describing of the age of Sarah, 100 is single, 20 is single, and the single 7 is in plural, which is a simple way to explain that whoever makes himself humble in this physical world, and is not so much after the greatness in the physical world, he would be a great person in the spiritual world. Okay, so you have a very shallow approach, saying what? That if you're not putting your efforts so much in richness and career and honor and whatever people are chasing after, whatever we are being preached to chase and to respect, fame, money, power, whatever, looks, all of that, then you'll be considered to be a great human being in the world to come. That's a very religious dimension. But if we look at Abraham and Sarah, they did not live this kind of a life. They were famous people. They were celebrities. Wherever they went, they were celebrities. Wherever they went, they became rich. They were very much respected. They were associating with Pharaoh, with kings. Abraham was a became an associate. The moment Abraham went to Egypt, he was already associated with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh took Sarah to his palace. And when Abraham is coming to pleasure to the land of the Philistines, he immediately associated with Avimelech, the king of the Philistines. When he comes to when he's fighting the war against to save his nephew, then he talks to the king of Sodom, and then he brings the tithing to the king of Jerusalem. Abraham is a celebrity. He was not sitting there in a cave and saying, "Who am I? I'm nothing." And it says he was so rich, he had so much. That's not what we're talking about. So it's like there's a contradiction. No, it's not a contradiction if you know how to read the story. The story is like this. The story is like this. When you put all your efforts, which means when we're saying small and big, we are talking about relativity. When a person is putting all his or her efforts for looking for the fulfillment of our vision, everybody wants to be successful. The question is the vision, goal setting. Everybody learns that. You know, you study business, you have to learn about goal settings. Okay? You run a business, you're talking about goals all the time. That's very important. But the question is, how do you define the goal? If it's all about the focal point, if the goal is just money, that's very debilitating. Why? You don't want just money. Money is a mean. It's not a goal, can never be a goal. Whoever is being educated, and there are a lot of research that was published in the last few decades, it's very wrong to focus only on money. And therefore, there's a whole school in business starting from the 90s, basically, after a lot of research, that when you have a vision, you have to have also part of the vision, a bigger picture, values that are greater than life. Otherwise, it's not going to work for the long run. That's research. So that's exactly what the Zohar is saying. Whoever is focusing, his focal point is only on the physical world, he is a small person, because the world is not just physical. The well-being of a human being is not just physical. The well-being of a human being is being able to live a double life like Sarah. In order to do that, you have to expand your thinking, your awareness. And therefore, when we ask the question, why do we need to study Torah? It's not somehow the studying of the Torah, as we're talking about being Jewish or being part of monotheism, is you study Torah. Why do you study Torah? Oh, you have to have some respect for the divine. This is not the idea. The idea is that if you really understand how the universe is structured and how every human being is structured, our needs, let's say that the human need is 100%, okay? And what the Zohar is saying, a very small percentage of that need is in the physical dimension. Most of your need is in the spiritual dimension. in the world above, the world beyond. Now, in order to be able to extract the 100%, you have to create an awareness that has the ability to see, perceive, understand the 100%. And here we have, for instance, I'll give you, we'll see a few things over here that we have about the burial of Abraham, of Sarah. I'm sorry. And then later on in this parasha, we have also the passing away of Abraham and his burial. A very important part of our lives is loss. People don't live forever. So people that you love and you care for, sooner or later, they will not be part of your physical life anymore. How do you deal with that? Okay, how do you deal with that? And there's a whole Zohar about the idea that when we die, we don't really die. It's just that very small fraction of the wavelength of our existence, which is a physical body, that finishes. But the bigger part of the frequencies of our existence is not in the physical dimension. We live in both dimensions. When the physical aspect of our existence disappears, that's called death. It's not really death, it's a death of that physical part. But most of the day of our existence is not in the physical dimension, it's in the spiritual dimension. That's why we say all the time, when we leave this world, and you hear that a lot, you cannot take with you nothing of what you're being educated is the most important. You cannot take money with you. There's no way to take it with you. You cannot take the assets. You cannot take shares. You cannot take land registry over lands and houses and stuff like this. So what can you take? Only your acquirements, which means all your possessions in the spiritual realm. How do I achieve possessions in the spiritual realm? Exactly, that's what we're talking about. Why do you have to study the Torah? Why do you have to study Kabbalah? You have to study the awareness that how to expand your perception, as we said before. When you are realize that focusing only on this physical aspect of a dear one, father, a mother, a child, a spouse, when the physical reality of their existence is all what you've got, when they die, that's horrible. You have almost no way to deal with that unless you just go into denial. Okay. And a lot of people do that. And sometimes they're successful with it. And they find somebody else to fulfill the same thing, the same need of closeness and physical relations and stuff like this. But that's not what a human being is composed of. There's a body, but there's a soul. And the soul is much bigger than the body. You don't see that, but the fact you don't see something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You know, do we see electricity running in the wires? No, we don't. Still there. Do we see the radio waves right now going through our brain? No. Do we feel them? No, but they exist. Okay. Information right now, once we had an exposure to information through books, then newspapers, wow, then radio. Today, the information is huge. It's a universe of its own. It's a flood. Okay, do we see it? No, but we can tap into it with our phone. Amazing, right? And that is only a fraction of how the universe is really structured. So what we are talking about in this parasha And that, so we spoke about relationship with a human being and losing that relationship. Abraham is losing Sarah. Okay? And then where it says later on in the Zohar, that it says on verse 3 about the Abraham Vayakum Avraham me'al pnei meto, and Abraham is rising from above his dead one. Okay, why does it say rising? Or it's like in Hebrew, it's also the word that when somebody is mourning for a close relative, first degree relative, you sit on the ground, okay, and then on the seventh day, the morning of the seventh day after the burial, you're being raised. You're being raised, vayakom. You're being raised. It's kima. And kima in the Zohar, kima means a revelation and an arousal of existence, which means there is something about the idea that yes, you lost a physical connection, but you have to rise above it. And you can rise above it. Even Abraham did, he's losing Sarah. They were married more than 100 years. Okay? They were a real power couple. Okay? They were not just a couple. They were Abraham and Sarah. Okay? One of the most famous couples in the history of humanity, celebrities even 2,000 years after they passed on. Okay? And he's rising, which means when you're connected to the 100% of reality, the loss of a small fraction, which is just the body, is not so hard to overcome. Okay? Then we have the story after that is getting Isaac married. And that's another story, looking for a mate. And we know that looking for a mate is not a rational. The moment you make it a rational thing, you're limited. You're in a problem. Because finding a mate, if you look at it rationally, what are the chances? What are the odds to find your real mate? Here it's all a miracle. Abraham says, I have an idea. It has to be somebody from my family. Okay, we narrowed down from billions of people over the whole planet. Oh, we just narrowed down to the family of Abraham. Most of us don't have that idea. Okay, but still, who would be the person? And Eliezer, the servant of Abraham, he goes to Haran. He's traveling from Israel of today till to Turkish Kurdistan of today, Haran. The city is still there. And he's coming to the well. That's where you meet everybody because everybody has to come to the well to get water. And he's praying to God. He's saying, I'm not smart. I have no idea. Just show me. Show me a sign, something that is beyond natural, something that is beyond, because finding a soulmate is not a natural thing. It is a miracle. What does it mean, a miracle? It is a supernatural thing. How would I know? Sometimes you know somebody for years, and only later you realize that is your soulmate. So the fact if there's chemistry or love at first sight is not a proof. A lot of times, the people that you think cannot be, how many couples that are amazing couples, but were the first time they met, they were sure this is the last person who would marry. Okay, logic has nothing to do if with this is my mate or this is not my mate. What are we talking about? So if I'm not considering the supernatural, the spiritual dimension, with all the structures in that spiritual dimension, which means what will allow me to acknowledge, to recognize, to get the idea that that person is the person I'm supposed to share my life with for the rest of my life. You know, I think that most people don't want to get married only short term. Okay? People, if they have a vision about a mate, it's somebody that we can spend our lives together. That's the healthy way to look at it. Not something, you know, let's have fun for a few months, few years, and then, of course, we'll just terminate the relationship and we'll look for something else. Most people are not good with that. Although you can think about it this way, it's not healthy. How do we know? People are switching mates all the time. You know, research is showing they're not so happy. I'm not saying everybody is married, they're happy. Sometimes being married is worse than being single. Some people, the marriage is worse than the dungeon with torture. Okay? How would I know? If you're not developing the supernatural connection, you want and get the presence because the other person, you're not marrying a body, you're marrying a complex, a body and soul. If there's no chemistry between the souls, could be a short-term chemistry between the two bodies. And then you realize you're living with a stranger. What the heck did I think when I got married with him or with her? Like, this is a stranger, more than stranger. This is my biggest enemy. Okay? There's nothing in common. We just hate each other more. You see two people walking down the street and they argue with venom. You know they're married because only married couple can have so much hatred for each other because they see each other as a, you know, each one sees the other as the warden of his jail. Okay, and that's not something that marriage was created for. How would I know? Same thing you have also that before that, the whole discussion between Abram and the people of Hebron about buying a property. How do I know I buy the right property? How would I find the right property? How many times you buy property and there's no guarantee that will be the right one. How many times, oh, I could have bought this property and for nothing and now, but I didn't. Why I didn't do that? I could buy it and be so rich right now. What will determine our decisions? It's all about being able to live in both dimensions, where your logic, the logic of the five senses is not the only thing that is running your decision-making process. It has to be something greater than that. How do you do that? So first of all, the whole idea of studying the Torah, and especially studying the Torah from a Kabbalistic point of view, is to train our brain, our consciousness, to be able to perceive a larger scope, because if we are not being trained, the spectrum that we get of everything that happens in our everyday life is so narrow that, as we know, the visible spectrum, about the electromagnetic radiation. Okay, what we see is a very, very narrow, small, limited part of the whole spectrum. Radio waves, rentgen, there's so many. There are other creatures that see violet, infrared that we cannot see. They can see a resolution that we cannot see. Okay? We see so little, we hear so little, and we understand even much lesser than that. So when it says that who is the great person, it's not the person that diminishes himself. No, it's not about honor, respect. It's also, yes, humility is important, but it's about when you say to yourself, what I see, what I hear with my physical senses, this is only a very small fraction of reality. It is so small. And more than 90% of reality is beyond my senses, and therefore I need to study and I need to develop that part of the brain that neurotheology is explaining. When you meditate, when you pray, when you meditate, and when you develop the sense of the presence of God in your life, you expand your capacity as a human being. That's what the Zohar is saying. When you're small in this world and big in the upper world, what does it mean? Your awareness is seeing the proportion. Your awareness, therefore, will see that, first of all, values, honesty, integrity, the biblical values of, do not covet your neighbor's house and wife and whatever. Do not kill, do not steal. Honor your father and mother. Honor the Shabbat. All of that. It's about one thing. It's about expanding the idea of what is important in our lives, how I develop that consciousness, that awareness, that thinking, that programming, that life is not just about acquiring a house, another human being that will serve me and be my mate, help me bring other children to the world, and help me in developing my career and my business and my future with having raising children. This is not physical in every aspect. A house is not a house. It has to become a home. The dimension that makes it a home is not just the fancy furniture and all the all today with all the smart equipment. How would it make you feel a home? Why do you need a mezuzah? Why do you need Chanukat HaBayit? What do you need to have in the house rituals that will bring in the dimension of positive energy, warmth? And that has to go with integrity, with loyalty, with prayers. This is what the message of Chayei Sarai is about. It's all about how can we live a complete life, which is basically a double life. You're a spiritual human being, and at the same time, you are occupied with making a living, finding a mate, raising a family. There's no contradiction on the other. It's like the contrary. The two aspects, they complete each other. A human being's a husband and wife, as the Zohar is explaining in many, many places, it's also completing two halves of souls into one. And only then the soul, the greater soul, can grow, free itself, and receive the divinity, the blessings, and so on. So that awareness must be developed in order for a human being to have what we call well-being. It doesn't matter how much money you have, you'll never be rich unless your awareness is rich. There's a little Zohar about it. We'll finish with that. Verse 41 in the Zohar Sulam. Hikach drachav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These are the ways of God. Im noten osher la'adam. If he gives richness to a person, why does God give richness to a person? And the answer is to feed the world. Why? What do I gain when I use my richness to feed the world? Meaning, reason to live. Why do I have so much money? Because if I use that money to elevate the lives of other people, I have a meaning. I'm using that energy of grace, loving and caring that we learn about in the previous parasha, in Lech Lecha, And that also will explain the numbers. When we speak about the numbers of 100 in Sarah's life, 100, yes, there are 10 sefirot, 10 dimensions, 10 emanations of spiritual light. Our physical senses can perceive a very small fraction of that. However, whatever you receive, doesn't matter whatever, it's talent, power, money, whatever. The moment you take it just for yourself, it will burn you, like Sodom and Gomorrah. They were thought, we are here just to take any success and power that we have and enjoy it for ourselves. What will be the result? Sodom and Gomorrah. They were burnt to ashes. You know, most people are not burnt physically, but mentally they are burnt. They're fried. Why? Selfishness. Okay, so whatever you take, and we're talking about 10 dimensions, 10 emanations, so you give it back. I'm having that. Could be richness, could be whatever, wisdom, beauty, power. I'm using it in order to share with others. So if you share whatever you give, whatever you get, you use it to enlarge yourself. So you're not just that recipient, final position of just receiving, but you become a beginning of a whole new world. And that's called returning light. So when there's returning light, which means everything you get, immediately you think how to use it for others. So it's 10 by 10. 10 by 10, I won't go into the logic behind it. 10 by 10 is 100. Exactly how the life of Sarah is being related to. 100 and then 20. Sometimes it's 10 receiving, 10 giving, 10 together, 20. Okay? And then 7 years that needs to be manifested in this physical dimension that usually is aligned by the number 7, 7 days a week. Okay? We have so many sevens in the physical world, seven seas, seven continents. It doesn't matter if there's seven. It's like just the physicality is a lot under the number 7. One above 7 is 8. 8 is already a symbol for the world beyond. However, lo asaze, if the person is not using that, ela shemitgaeh be'osho, his richness makes him proud, and he's using that pride to abuse others mentally, physically, whatever. Boyuke, he will be smitten by that. Shekatuv, as it says in the book of Ecclesiastes 5:12, Osher shamur lebealav lera'ato. Richness that is preserved for his owner, preserved, which means he's holding it for himself. Lera'ato, against him. It will be against him. He will be smitten by that. Im noten lo banim. So God is giving a person sons. Lama noten lo? Why does he give sons to a person? Kedei lelamdam derachav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to teach them the ways of God. Velishmo mitzvotav, and to observe his mitzvot. Kamu bavam. If the person did not do that, ela shemitgaeben, but he's like, you know, I'm so proud of my children. This one has a title in that, and that one is so smart, and this one is so beautiful and so powerful, and so bahem umuke, he will be smitten, plagued with that he is taking for himself. He will become childless or something like this. That will be his weak point. The moment you hold on to something, that becomes your weak point. So, to complete what we just speaking about, this parashat Chayei Sarah is about proportions. It's about if you want to be successful in life in general, in business, in raising a family, in everything that you do, you have to understand that you have to dedicate a small part of your mental and spiritual capacity into the development of the physical reality. The majority of your forces should be invested in your spiritual awareness, existent dimension. When you ask a person, what did you achieve in your life? So we read about Abraham, that when he leaves this world, the Torah says very clearly that Abraham leaves this world zaken veshavea, old and satiated. Okay, that you can find in chapter 25, verse 8. Vayamot Avraham beseiva tova, and Abraham died in a good old age, zaken, old, veshavea, and satiated. This word belongs to when you eat well. And it's an amazing way to ask when somebody leaves this world, did he really fulfill his desires? Abraham did. Why? He lived that way of living through the whole spectrum. And that's why he left this world satiated. And we learn. If the end is well, all is well. And if it's not well, it's not the end. You'll have to come again and again till you learn to be satiated, because that's your calling, that's your destiny. So you have to develop that. That's a purpose you have to study. That's a purpose you have to meditate. That's a purpose you for prayers, for studying the Zohar and other parts of Kabbalah, to study any aspect of spirituality. Why? You won't be satiated. Your life will be a failure if you're not going to do that. Then you're going to find yourself a victim to your richness, to your family, to your health. Everybody who's physically into health is really healthy. Everybody who's famous is really satiated. Everybody has money. We all know it's very partial success. Why? Here is the code. Develop your spectrum, and the learning of spirituality is our brain is physically structured like this. It's neurotic, like the neurons in our brain. They need that spiritual dimension to be really in the state of well-being. When we are being haunted by fear, anxiety, depression, all of those thoughts that really deprives us for what the idea of having a real, authentic success. Why is it? Because when we did not develop those parts of the brain, like the frontal lobe, for instance, into vision, meditation, and it's never too late. Prayers, when we do that, the noise that those emotions that are very primitive make are diminishing and diminishing and diminishing. And then you're not OCD and you're not depressed and you're not, I hope you got the idea. This is the key for a real successful life. That's why Abraham and Sarah are such a model for all of us. That's why Abraham is called our father Abraham, and Sarah is our mother Sarah, because it's not just a physical fatherhood and motherhood. They are the father and mother of the type of a human being that we are supposed to become. Thank you, everyone, and have a great, great, successful week and a life. God bless you.